In that brief excerpt, we heard of Master speaking, and he said, I finished, I didn't come here for any desires of my own. I finished my desires many, many, many incarnations ago. So you have to ask the question, why did he come? And the Masters really have one intention, which is they come for their disciples. And they come for the good of the world and often to set planetary directions. Great avatars come to set planetary directions to take the whole planet through important shifts of consciousness. But even that is still just coming for the disciples, because nothing of that happens merely by the Master himself being born and dying. It happens when his life and his consciousness is received and absorbed by others, and then the innovation and the expansive awareness and the experience of God is transmitted through those who are in tune with him. And it's through that energy that change takes place. If there were no disciples, if there were no receptive individuals, the Master would not be magnetized to incarnate. It's a very important aspect of the Master's life to realize, which is to say the meaning of his life does not exist outside of our involvement in it. Now, of course, every individual has a choice as to whether and how much they want to be involved with that consciousness, because fundamental to the divine law which governs the descent of an avatar is the respect for the free will of the individuals. Some of you may have received a letter that I wrote the last couple of days from a woman who is concerned about her mother, who is now in the astral world, because her mother had a very closed consciousness toward God when she, just as she was dying, in the end of her life, she became bitter. And this woman is anxious that her mother receive God's presence. But I had to say to her, your mother simply cannot receive a consciousness higher than she herself wants to receive. Now, all of us live in this world, and every single day, that's the choice we make. That's why that statement that Swamiji put into the Festival of Light of St. John about Jesus, as many as received him, to them gave he the power to become the sons of God. It's a very interesting statement. Not as many as heard him, not as many even as proclaim their belief in him or join the right institution or anything, but who actually received him. Receiving, you see, is very, very personal. And receiving is a question of what state of consciousness do we want to experience? Not what state of consciousness does Master have, but what do I really want to experience? And, you know, we fool ourselves a lot because we want to look good, we want to sound good, we want to affirm things about ourselves, we want to all those things. But the level of consciousness we're actually willing to receive is a factor of so many things. Above all, it's a factor of love, especially in the context that love casts out fear. The limitation we experience in how much of the Guru's consciousness we can receive is the degree to which we are unafraid to become something that we don't already know. In the Festival of Light every week, we have that line where the bird says, everything is going fine, but then night fell, and the bird says, how can I fly in this darkness? And the night whispered, surrender to me. Peace awaits you in the unknown. There's so much in that, just those few sentences. Because we're perfectly willing to go along with God's consciousness and with what Master wants for us, as long as we can see the way. As long as it still fits in to what we're already comfortable with. But oh, we're afraid if I give myself to God, I'll lose my dream of family, home, prosperity, health, all these different things that we think about, whatever it is. You know, I won't ever be able to achieve X or Y. But peace awaits us in the unknown. And the Master can't force himself into our consciousness. He can only be invited by our matching his vibration. And in this excerpt also that of Master's talk that we heard there, he talks about working. And he talks about working for God. And one of the characteristics of being part of Master's family is that he did not come simply to contemplate God in solitude. He did not come purely for inner communion. His own life from the time he came to his guru, he himself talks about how, you know, he thought he could be careless in this world. He thought his desire for God and his communion with God excused him from being attentive to the things that Sri Yukteswar wanted to teach him about how also to live in this world. And he himself had a certain, at least the way he plays it out, he had a certain aversion to getting involved in the world. And Sri Yukteswar had to coax him out of that. Why keep all the honey for yourself? You know, you must also give it away. And so at that point in his life, he went out and he founded a school. I mean, you have to think about that. Yogananda was a very young man in his mid-20s, and when he had completed his work with his guru, what did he do? He didn't go to the Himalayas. He didn't become a wandering sadhu. He went and persuaded a wealthy man to give him land, and he started a school for children. Ask any of our teachers. That keeps you really busy. And it keeps you very oriented toward helping others, toward watching all the time, to being constantly attentive. And that was the example he set for us. And then he only left that because he was called to America. And what did he do in America? Nothing but work. Or I should say, meaning he constantly worked. That's what I meant by that. Do you think that we can be in tune with him without also embracing that which was important to him? And what was important to him is also described in Swamiji's words that Master read for us. Serve God, not people, but serve God in people. And lovely parts toward the end of what David was reading. Be large, not small. Be majestic in your confidence. We have this idea, oh, well, I need to be timid. I need to be humble. I need to not be noticed in the biography of Master that will be available to us in about a month in America. Swamiji has a chapter called Salient Characteristics of Master. I'm going to use that as the basis of a course in February. Here's one of Master's characteristics that Swami emphasizes. His voice had power. He said there was no self-abasement in Master's humility. Even his voice, you hear it, it was loud, it was imposing, it was forceful. Swami Kriyananda has the same voice. You can hear him everywhere in a room once he begins to speak. There's no imposition of that will. But he's fearless in his commitment to serving God. And he's majestic and he's not small. They set this example for us. They're not doing it so that we can just praise them. They're telling us how to be in tune with them. I was talking to some young devotees just a few days ago, and they were talking about representing our teachings to people who are older or maybe have more life experience than they do. And, you know, these are natural thoughts for young devotees to have. How much experience do I have? What do I really know? And And I was sharing with them a thought that has been with me since the very beginning of my spiritual life. Always speak what you know. Don't ever talk about what you don't know. Once there was we joked about one of the young ministers many years ago giving a sermon, and for some reason he thought an appropriate topic was the difference between Nirvikalpa and Sabbakalpa Samadhi. And he failed to follow what is known as the first law of holes, H-O-L-E-S, holes. When you are in one, stop digging. And he buried himself in philosophy he didn't really know. So we need to be humble enough to only talk about what you know. But at the same time, I've always felt this unreasonable confidence, not in myself, but in what we represent, which is the teachings of this great master, this expression through Ananda of this great work. And what we say has its importance, not because of our wisdom, but because of our sincere commitment to the wisdom of these great souls who guide us. And we can stand in that in any company, because we're standing in our sincere desire to serve God and to be in tune. That's what gives us majestic self-confidence. That's what gives us what Swamiji calls dignity, adds nicely to your childlike spirit. And that dignity is not the dignity of self-importance. That's the dignity of the constant awareness of the extraordinary privilege to be in relationship to these masters. So many people on the planet don't even know that the masters are there. What to speak of having opened their hearts, or farther, much farther, as most of you have gone, into defining our lives by that reality. This is not a cause for personal pride, but this is a cause for so much gratitude and such an appreciation of the opportunity that's been given to us, that why do we ever worry about anything? We can be utterly humble, but there's no need for self-abasement. We are devotees, disciples, students, friends of a great master. And he came in response to our call. Also in the Festival of Light, words so exquisite in their meaning, worth repeating over and over again, which we do, and that's why we repeat them. A prayer of love went up from earth, and you responded. Now make no mistake, that prayer of love is not the pine trees, it's not the ocean, no, it's not the dolphins or the whales either. That prayer of love goes up from all of creation, yes, the longing of all of creation to merge back, but from the hearts of mankind everywhere, goes up, and the phrase is, in wordless yearning. We don't always even know what it is we long for. Before we find the spiritual path, we may not have any idea that it's God we're seeking. Swami Kriyananda tells us, and he often tells us repeatedly, he talks again and again about his longing and his rejection of God as the answer, until he became humbled enough and sincere enough to work it out in his own mind that the only answer was God. And at first we can't put words on our yearning. We just know that somehow what is happening in an external way is not why I was born. And what is being offered to me in terms of the self-gratification that is considered the ideal by so many people is not going to work for me. And we may not have words for our yearning until the masters give us words. You know, I had no idea I was looking for the spiritual path, but when somebody handed me a book about self-realization, it was, oh, this is it. These are the words for my yearning. And oh, so much deeper becomes the relationship with the masters, because that longing for truth is also that longing to be loved. to be understood, to be accepted, to be safe. Every human being longs for the same thing, but not safe in the ego. That word safe is a wonderful word that people use a lot. There was a period of time when everyone felt, well, Ananda needs to become a place that's safe for people. And people just say these things without thinking. And finally I had to say, no, actually, Ananda is not a place that's safe. Ananda puts your ego in absolute jeopardy. You know, you don't come to this place to be safe. You come to this place to be liberated. And yes, you can say, eventually you'll be safe. Even a little practice of this inward religion will save us from dire fears and colossal sufferings. But we're not seeking safety. We're seeking freedom. It's very, very different. And you see, that's the fearlessness that enables us to receive. Master, you heard his voice. He said, I'm not here for those who just come for a little while and go. I'm here for those who have embraced, as he has embraced, the absolute commitment to seek God. And the wonderful thing about that, you don't even have to be good at it. You don't have to be flawless in it. You don't even have to be adequate. You just have to persevere. And I've often said here, but it's so important to remember, we can't help the position we're in when we start. We can't help the karmic bombs that go off that make us do things that are so nutty. But the one choice we have is that as soon as we see that we have been distracted, we bring our attention back. It doesn't matter how many millions of times we're distracted. As soon as we realize that we have given in to self-gratification and ego, we come back. And that's the courageous fearlessness that's required. How long it takes, how many humiliations we endure, how many tragedies we experience, how many disappointments, but it doesn't matter. As soon as we realize that we have veered away, we come back. And nor is it a misery to do so. Even a little practice of this inward religion will free one from dire fears and colossal sufferings. January 5th, really, for all of us, is Thanksgiving Day. You know, we can celebrate with our country that a long time ago the American Indians and the first pioneers managed to get this country off the ground, and we're very glad about that. We can celebrate the harvest that we don't even participate in. We just go to the Safeway and get it, you know. But if you want to be grateful, and if you want to really have a Thanksgiving Day, thank Master for responding to our wordless yearning. Thank him for responding. A prayer of love went up from earth and you responded. A ray of your consciousness burst downward through night skies of consciousness, burst forth and was born on earth for the redemption of mankind in human form. Wow. You know, really, you can just spend the rest of your life just going over that again and again. And every night and every morning and every moment that you remember. Thank you, Master. Help me to receive you. Reveal thyself. Make me one with your light.